Greetings and salutations, you beautiful lovers of syllables this fair evening. Are you feeling as gorgeous as you look? That's pretty gorgeous. Indeed, my name is Clara Rose Thornton, and I hail from Chi-Town, the Windy City. Has anyone here ever been to Chicago? You? Oh, a couple of appreciative yips. I like that. Chicago is marvelous. It's a very Irish and Irish-American city. And it reminded me, Dublin reminded me very much of it when I first came, because both cities are kind of split by a river down the middle and have this inexplicable north-south side rivalry. Does Cork suffer the same malady?
Yes.
It's so strange. I find that so strange. The reasoning behind these things are so just arbitrary, superficial. Really? Why do humans have this just universal tendency to want to find difference to fight over? It's like, I just don't understand. We'll talk a bit more about that later in the set here this evening. That is something that I do like to focus on in my work, my broadcasting and my journalism and my spoken word. The idea of social inclusion and togetherness as opposed to division. And Ireland has been such a fascinating place for me to find myself in because of these issues, because of the point that Ireland is at right now. It's an amazing time to be here. Ireland is rapidly evolving and changing right now. Immigration into the country, rapid immigration, is a relatively recent phenomenon. You know, only in the last 15 years or so have people been flooding in, as opposed to the idea of more people flooding out. Now, the idea of what it means to be Irish is evolving at this moment, and it feels really amazing to be here and help that evolution culturally in whatever small way that I can. Now, I have been living in Dublin for 2 years now. Don't hate me for it. There's a Dublin Cork rivalry too, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, I love it. Now, Cork is a lot friendlier, I'll say that, on the streets. I do like that. There's a lot more space in the interactions, a lot more space between the moments and the molecules. It's more relaxed. It's chillier. I dig it. This is my fourth time in Cork, my third time performing. It just gets more and more warm and beautiful every time I'm here. I love it. Thank you for having me once again. Bow to you. Now, we're going to get started here with a piece that I wrote about the journeys that we undertake to discover oneself. Now, the beautiful organizer of this event, Paul, and I were speaking at length today about such journeys, travels. The way that I ended up here in Ireland was a quite circuitous route. And it revealed to myself many aspects and facets of myself that previously I didn't know existed. Does anyone else here suffer from the existential disease of wanderlust?
Yes.
You nod? Okay. Well, this piece is called Angels. It's going to kick off a set that focuses on place and the dynamics of place. The idea of togetherness in such places. Time and space have never forgiven me. They toy with me. They play. On a mountain near Treeline, on a peak in Colorado, I experienced my first natural high. That sky had allowed me to slip in between the lights that glistened that christened the vision of a sky filled with a sheet of sugar. A sky filled with a sheet of sugar. Those lights that anointed the space between this fleshy form and the unseen had not shown their faces. Unfortunately, on the ground floor of the city, had not been there to swing open their gates. I lay there, my first taste of independence, pure, true, and separate from the earth. The lights that sweeten nights with Tennessee skies, campfire, bourbon, and redneck whistles. A wisp of smoke and a candle in the grass above a network of blackened caves in red dirt, Dry County, Kentucky. It spawned an angel. It spawned an angel still trapped. It spawned an angel. You see, it spawned an angel. It spawned an angel still trapped. It spawned an angel. For the next thing I knew, I was on a road trip through Wyoming. The articulation of form on a high desert sagebrush step was yet another polished step in a holy direction. What does the road do to us? What did it do to me? Let's see. I told the short Lebanese farmer on a farm in Quebec that though I lacked experience, I had heart. I had told him these things from the start. I had given up a job at the desk with the rest, packed life in a van, and headed to Canada. The email said organic, and I said tomatoes, and let's grow it all, and let's see what he knows. And let's together further this cause, this life, this strife. Because we both need air as fresh as maple syrup. You need help, and I need affirmation. I am making this consecration, and you? You give me a cabin in the woods. Let's get on with this holy integration. Well, he ended up being a racist prick. He asked, all you black people can dance, right? He asked, why do all you like the rap? The rap. That's it, right? Well, later, he got a little peeved, because it seemed like I might have done a little something on my SATs. Farmer got ugly. He was strange. I left. Down to Montreal, Nova Scotia was next. And the waters, and the moonshine, and the deportations. Up and down, and back and forth. Up and down and back and forth. Up, down, back, forth. A soul soothed by strangers and fate. A soul eased by strangers and fate. A soul moved by strangers and fate. A mountaintop wedding in Maine. A hitchhike to the ocean. Two girls, one girl, and a dream. A collection of schemes. The endless, endless streams. Europe. They say it tends to happen to you. Europe. It kept coming as if in a dream. And then, At the foot of Place de la Bastille in Paris, a car of young Italians tried to convince me to fly to Rome. Have you ever had your cab chased in Paris by a drunk man on his birthday? I have. And have you ever been attacked by two gypsy women violently, one holding Jesus and the other a calendar in Zagreb? In Zagreb. I have. The dares and the stares and the motion in the mental attic are all driven by the beat of a drum. All driven by the beat of a drum. And the whispers that you hear when you swear that all you fear is the truth. Then come back to this moment. Stay silent and come back to this moment. Come here. Come back to this moment. Thank you. True story. that gypsy lady attack is still so fresh and vivid in my mind. It was I lived in Croatia for a while in Zagreb, and I was doing the touristy thing the first couple days, and I was in front of this beautiful basilica. Right in the city center, it was one of the main tourist attractions, and it was like my second night there, and I had no experience with that culture. It doesn't really exist. It doesn't exist at all in America, and I'm not here to spin any sort of negative stereotypes. I don't know a lot about that culture. I just know that experience was very interesting. These two women literally chased myself and my friend down the street, demanding more money, waving a statue of Jesus in the air and like shaking a calendar as if we were supposed to take the calendar and give more money. We already had given them 25 kuna, which is the equivalent of about €6. That was a wild experience. I still sometimes feel like there's whispers of that in dreams that I have, you know. But traveling, you know, it introduces you to many, many facets of this grand, grand globe. Now, my next piece is going to take us to a very specific place on this globe, New York City. Oh, I already heard of who. Somebody's been there. Who all has been there or lived there?
Yeah.
Hold on. More than Chicago, what's that all about?
The ocean.
What?
The ocean.
The proximity, right? Yeah, Chicago's been landlocked, isn't it? Yes, I lived in Brooklyn, Queens, and Harlem in Manhattan for a time. There were a bunch of places around that mad, mad place. And before I lived there, when I started to visit, I got sort of shocked into the reality of the place, because New York has this sort of fabled aspect to it where, you know, we think that it's all about this glittered Times Square avenues and the big bright lights and like fine guys in nice Salvatore Ferragamo suits, you know, strolling up and down Wall Street. No, that is not what New York is about. You know, you live there for a time. There's a lot of broken people there, and there's a lot of dark vibrations. And my first time visiting, I wrote a piece about it. If you'd like to hear it, here it goes. Stepping off a Greenwich Village train, I expected wider streets. Perhaps the jasmine in my head were more robust. New York City shines like a jewel drizzled in semen. Christ Pantocrator radiating under every dingy, decrepit doorstep. I looked up at her grandeur, curled eaves dripping black and pristine. A huddled mass of vibrations, bent, configured, discreetly, onto one little oblong island space. As if the universe had been cramped and uninviting, no room at the inn of biblical yore. At the precise moment when God had need to up his tenancy. When God had need to up his income from wayward lodgers. Are we wayward lodgers? I suppose conceiving of our maker as a landlord is a comforting thought in Greenwich Village. In the village, there are crooked vaginas, and there are men too sad to move. Across the village, the dust of great souls lay languid on the sidewalks, and rocker kids don't give a damn for Palestine. If we and these are just biding time, renting space in the air here in New York City, a respect for rubbish comes into play. My play. Filthy because it exists. I reach up, I lean up, and am soiled as I continue to grow. If I could see this clearly, I would know that we are not here, not in vain, not dying in the streets of New York City as peculiar lives in other dimensions stand still. Not failing at the guitar string's evocation. Not failing at the child's almond eyes. But rather, here only because he needed it. Self-affirmation is all we are, really, is all we are. Self-affirmation is all we are, really. Here in New York City. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now this next piece, I'm going to take you all right here to gorgeous Aotearoa. Please excuse my terrible Irish accent. And this piece includes a little bit of a necessity for Irish accent. So yeah, let's put that disclaimer in right in the beginning there. I used to think I could do a great one before I actually moved here. I don't try anymore. I don't. This piece is called Invisible Enemy. And I was actually inspired to write it following my first trip to Cork last summer. And I wrote it for the launch of an amazing organization that's based in Dublin called City of Sanctuary, the launch that we had there in Phoenix Park. It's all about fostering a sense of community and safety and inclusion for immigrant populations in Ireland. And the experience that I had in Cork that sort of jump-started the idea, got me thinking about other things and subtleties that I see is, you know, I had been told, and this is not to say that I know this to be true, you guys can tell me if this is true or not, that some folks from Cork kind of have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder when somebody from Dublin tries to come down and like tell them where to take them in a taxi, or like tell them where something is in Cork. It's like, wait a second, this is my city. You can go back up to the big smoke and leave us alone. Is that somewhat true? Kind of? A little bit? I think some of it was that, but I got into a taxi for my first time here, and I was just very casually, very politely telling the woman the directions I had been told to take me to my B&B, and I kind of caught immediate attitude. And she didn't know that I was from Dublin yet, because the person that I was with hadn't kind of started talking to ease over what had become a tense moment after what happens next. So I just, maybe it was like American, foreigner, like big city, something, you know, kind of thing. But then it got racial, and it was very odd. When I said, okay, sorry about that, she said, all right, girlfriend, and snapped her finger. Excuse me? And I wanted to say, is that your imitation of a sassy African-American woman? Like, well, what is that? You don't know my name. I'm a customer in your business, in your taxi, and you're imitating a negative stereotype about my culture as you see it. And I thought that was very odd. It reminded me of like that's something that would happen in like the 80s in America. Like I was just like, really? And it got me thinking about, and while I was in court that, you know, that first weekend, and I know that there's a somewhat substantial African population here. I mean, it's not massive, you know. And I felt like I had people just sort of like staring at me when I would walk around, as if it was more of a rarity to see black people in the street here still. And I kind of felt like a circus elephant sometimes. Like, hi guys, you know? And it was this idea got circulating about just really understanding what the concept of inclusion really means, just allowing people to be a complete part of the fabric of a community, as opposed to part of the frayed edges. And I wrote a piece called Invisible Enemy. Truly understanding the concept of inclusion is a process. A process that involves removing the mask you defer to each morning when asking the mirror about your own fate. The mirror that tells you you are exactly where you are supposed to be, and the soil you stand on is yours as it was your father's, and as it stands and shall ever be. The mask that informs you of correctness, that informs you of the correct state of affairs. The mask custom fit to your jawline, its lines of heredity etched deep, its lines of pride carved deep. Truly understanding the concept of inclusion is the recognition that this mask is a bit of armor. This mask is a bit of armor. And when is it that a fighter needs to fight? When is it that a fighter covers his wounds to display his might? Why choose to make every day your battleground? And who is this enemy you're convinced is staring you down? Why ready a face each day to fight an army of difference you see advancing from across the clay, dead set on snatching that sameness you've been taught to regard as non-threatening? The all-day-long battle cries, heard in phrases like, go back to Africa. Go back up your tree, you black bastards. You packies. You foreigners galore. Jesus, give this soil back to me. Inclusion is leaving out the fear. Inclusion means leaving behind the fear, allowing the idea of otherness to merely sit near no fear, pronouncing the battle lines of division hazy and less clear. We are yet like angels, angels in mid-flight, movable, ethereal, and in each instance we reveal our own weightless nature when we do what we know to be right. Put down your mask. Cast down the armor. No one asked for this fight. Because in the end, there is no victory to be won, only misdirected shows of might. No fear. No fear. About the Black Lives Matter movement in America. Who here is familiar with that going on right now?
Yeah.
A lot of people. It's marvelous. It has alerted people all around the globe to a phenomenon that is not a new thing. Statistically, every 28 hours, an unarmed black man is killed by police or vigilantes in my country. And this has been going on since the end of slavery. You could say that this eradication of young black men with no legal recourse, almost always for the killers, and the incarceration, unjustly and at a hugely disproportionate amount, of young black men is simply the continuation of slavery in the paperwork. It's a very sad state of affairs for a country that is supposedly the vanguard of the free world. Irony. I wrote the piece, my first summer in Ireland, after the first of what has been a string of high-profile cases that brought the world's attention to this very unfortunate phenomenon. That was the case of Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman in 2013, where a 17-year-old boy with nothing but Skittles and an iced tea in his pocket, walking back home to his grandmother's house to watch a basketball game with his little brother, was stalked through a neighborhood and shot dead because he was perceived to be potentially trying to rob a house because he was, as we quote from the police tapes, when the killer George Zimmerman called the police, they told him, no, don't follow him, it's fine, don't worry about it. So it was a black man with a hoodie. We've had a lot of break-ins lately, I think this is the guy. And it was just a kid walking home. And George Zimmerman got off. He wasn't even arrested for about a month after it happened. And the outrage finally hit fever pitch. And I was so far away from my home country watching this happen across computer screens and just felt so powerless. And this allowed me to feel like I was contributing something to it. It's become a relatively popular piece in Ireland. I'm happy about that. It says something about the Irish people's awareness of the idea of otherness. I know that you all feel that as well in your history very deeply. This piece is called Wet Grass. When did we begin? When did we begin this slaughter? How long has the flesh of young black men been cannon fodder? Direct me to the commencement, the feather-thin line drawn into the muck that is the sands of time, announcing the henceforth immediate devaluing of black life. Has it always been? Has it always been a sin to be brown in your vicinity? To challenge your idea of your own divinity? As the rain beats down my window here in Ireland, the only image is springing to mind through the wet glass of a clear torrent is the red blood that began to flow onto the wet grass in a torrent, clearly so abhorrent. The night a white passing male decided for America once again. Once again. That black means danger. that black means stranger. That black means no walking my streets without a license. The night another unarmed black man's blood spilled onto wet grass. Has it always been? Has it always been a sin to be brown in your vicinity? To challenge your ideas of your own divinity. This is sickening. America, whose bones I built, I will never again look at your son without seeing the bleeding gun wound of your guilt. This is sickening. And your right wing celebrates the blood as if it's an epiphany. This is sickening. To be brown in your vicinity. Thank you very much.